the whole carnival that is street racing.
It's just a culture in itself. So it's just a vibe. They'll be hanging out the back of the truck with duffel bags of money. We here. I'm actually the first dunk in the world to be fiberglass.
Anybody know how much you weigh?
I don't even know how much I weigh.
We got a little fucking G-body.
You got a G-body?
Yeah, a little Grand National.
You say you want to run for a little bit of...
Welcome to Oil and Whiskey, an Ironclad original. Today's guest is Sage Thomas, also known as the Daunt Master, owner of Inner In and Out Customs Auto Shop and Racing Team. You can keep up with Sage on Instagram at @OneDauntMaster, In and Out Customs, or his website, inandoutcustoms.com. This isn't the Donk Daddy. This isn't the Donk Dude.
The Donk Guy.
This isn't the Donk Aficionado.
That'd be you.
This is the Daunt Master.
Oh.
Special guest. Owner of In-N-Out Customs Auto Shop and Racing Team, but I'm sure everyone just knows him as the Donk Master, fastest donk around, YouTube channel extraordinaire. It's going to be a fun one.
What do we refer to him as? Mr. Donk Master?
I think it's Mr. Matt. Mr. Master. Yes.
Are you sure?
I wonder if he goes by the D-Master, too.
That's kind of cool.
I would.
I just kind of like that.
Well, welcome to Oil and Whiskey, man. Glad to have you.
I appreciate y'all having me.
Absolutely. We ran into each other at SEMA and had a brief little conversation and wanted to set this up, so we've been looking forward to it. We were talking talking just off air right before you came in. Not off air. We were, I guess, on air. And are you referred to as Mr. Master, or is this Sage, or this DM? Or the D Master, or like what do you go by?
If people call me Sage, Donk Master, the fastest man in the world on 26-inch wheels, you know what I mean? What are you?
Well, let's get right into it, because like I said a little bit before we started, like, you're not just like a donk guy, right? You've self-titled yourself the Donk Master, right?
Oh, so, yeah. Well, actually, a kid came up with that name from Orangeburg, which I'm originally from.
Okay.
So, you know, growing up in Orangeburg, down in rural area, Orangeburg always had the baddest and fastest donk there was. So, you know, about 15 years ago, I had a little fella call me. He said, when I came to the car show, I shook all the cars and turned the alarms on because I had my big block was so loud. So he said, I'm going to call you the Donk Master. And you know what I mean? I just roll with it.
Well, stuck. Being the master of something, you know, is quite a feat. I mean, I know Phil... Oh, yeah. Phil's also known in circles about being the C10 God, right? So that's
we were going Miata Master.
No. This is a sorry. I want to get, before we go into it, I want to give you a little bit of backstory just so you kind of know where everybody's at. So Phil and Jeremy brothers, born and raised in the Midwest.
Okay.
Right? I'm from the South, right? I grew up in Atlanta in the 90s, early 2000s, and then Birmingham as well, right? I listen to country music. I don't listen to any hip hop or rap. For these guys, they listen to a shit ton of hip hop and rap. However, they did not get to see the birth of
the donk,
the donks, the boxes, and the bubbles. They didn't get to see the Eminem livery riding around. They didn't get to see the Newport car, which was one of my personal favorites. Right? They never got to see all of that. So
we just had the '96 Impala SS.
Yeah, stock. that would be a bubble. That'd be a bubble. So how? I want to know, I know you've been in the South, you're pretty much your whole life.
Oh yeah.
Where did the racing thing, before we get into donks, before we get into that, where did the racing and the enthusiasm for cars themselves come from?
Oh, well, it's far from Orangeburg. So like I called my uncles, I don't know if y'all know about George Gaffney and Earl Gaffney. They're one of the pioneers of actually door slammer cars. So in Orangeburg Drag Strip is the home of the door slammers. And shout out to, I call them my uncles, but I grew up around them and they taught me a lot of ropes like Sonny Liddett, Sonny Tindall, Scotty Cannon, Jason Scruggs. So like all those people used to come to the tracks on every Friday and Sunday. And I used to see the white coming in with a briefcase with $200,000 in there with a helicopter. They come grudge race the boys out of New Jersey, out of Florida. And you know what I mean? And we see the 632 Mountain Motors where Sonny Liddett would fly in and tune the carburetors and Sonny Tindall would drive them. Like, I grew up seeing that stuff in the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, it is kind of was just in my blood to, for, you know what I mean, just drag racing. And then that's basically where the drag race stuff actually originated from for me as far as at the drag strip in Orangeburg.
Was it strictly about the cars, or was it the whole show? Was it the shit talking? It was the money. It was the everything that went along with it. Coming from street racing in those times, that, like, the cars were obviously a draw. I was into it cars before that, but the whole carnival that is street racing for money and watching that shit go down is a completely different event than most people are used to.
Yeah, that's basically what it's coming from. Is the whole, it's just a culture in itself. So it's just the vibe. When you go to the racetrack, you smell the cooking on the grill. You see everybody, you know what I mean, with their jury on. They come with their cars and their fancy trailers. And like you said, they start talking trash as soon as they hit the gate. Like for me, coming in the racetrack with an 18-wheeler full of cars and hanging off the 18-wheeler, I learned that because they'll be hanging out the back of the truck with duffel bags of money. We here. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they calling the racetrack out. So, and that time for me, being a young kid growing up and seeing that, I always wanted to be that guy. I'm gonna call out the entire racetrack, and I dare somebody to try me, and we gonna make it happen.
How much of it at that point and still to this day is showmanship and intimidation, just as much as the horsepower?
Oh, I mean, I do it every day. I mean, you know what I'm saying? My main thing was what they always told me: if you go say something, you better do it, and if you go talk that trash, you better back it up. Because you can't, if you go talk that trash, you better at least back it up. And that's instilled in me.
It's like boxing. I mean, you can only talk so much trash.
You better knock somebody out. At some point. Somebody's trying to knock you out.
You need your ass kicked or something.
Coming from that background and that life and living that every single weekend, you'd obviously, you know, there's showmanship about it. There's the talking shit. There's intimidation. You've got to be able to back it up, but you also don't want anybody to know what you really got. It's a whole game. Is it weird going to car shows or SEMA or places like that where everything's static and on display and all the hoods are up and, like, here's a list of my specs and this is exactly to the horsepower how much I made to the tires and stuff like that? Because that's a different world. Like, y'all don't talk about that shit in your world.
Nah. So basically, like, what we did with that was just build more cars. We got show cars, then we got race cars, and then we got grudge race cars. So it's the involvement of doing different things, different ways, but still showcasing our talents and stuff on what we do here at the shop. But it's just like, we got to have different cars because we never, you know, I mean, you can look in the car and see a small block, or you might can see a turbo, or you know it's an LS or a big block, but they don't know what's inside it, what kind of cylinder head, stuff like that. So we basically just started building different cars with different classes. And some of the cars, we'll tell everything down to the T. And some of them, we keep a little secret.
You know, I'm intrigued by the grudge car, right? So I get the show car deal, right? It's for cruising. But when you're taking something like that with that diameter of wheel, and you don't have a lot of tire there, what are you doing? What are you doing to a car? Like, what are you doing to be competitive to make that thing?
You think he's gonna tell you?
Well, just give me like a brief overview. All right, you don't have to give me the secret sauce, but
yeah. No, I mean, you know what I'm saying. I got a little gap sauce right here, that I definitely can give you, but you know what I'm saying. I just want to shout out to all my partners and sponsors, like QA1. They're real instrumental in getting these cars to hook up and go with the different shock driving and trying stuff. FTI transmissions, man, Greg and Paul and everybody over there, FTI, like, just the converters, the making a camshaft match with the converter and the gearing in the car is real instrumental on actually getting them to go down track on rubber band tires. And I mean, just the computer systems, you know what I'm saying? Like right now we're using the Holley Dominator stuff, and that, I'm talking about, that stuff is working. So we can control our torque curves and all that. And I mean, really the tuners, I got a couple real good tuners with a JP who tunes real good, and Frankie out of Las Vegas. And it's really just the team. I mean, that's really how to get these cars down the track. Like, doing this stuff for the last, I've been racing these big wheel cars over 20 years, and we're getting faster and faster every season. Not only just me, all my competition, everybody else in the big wheel world. So that is where it is coming to play. The shocks, torque converters, and your tuners. You know what I mean? You have to have good tuners that's knowledgeable of what we're trying to do.
Are most guys going more turbo setup so you can control the boost and when it comes on and get it off the line and then spool it up?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that, and that's what we do. And I'm working real close with Precision Turbo to do stuff with our wheels and our turbos and stuff like that to get the spool time and to get turbo lag out. But you can do it with the superchargers and the nitrous stuff too. So the tuners is real, is coming into play. Not only the driver, like I'm a driver, so I've been driving race cars 25 years, but the tuner is where it is at now with these cars going over 2,000 horsepower.
Take us back to, because I think nowadays, I mean, it's 2024. Yeah, 2024.
Just changed.
Yeah, you got to keep up with it, you know? So that's how you know I'm old. So you and a bunch of other guys have done a really good job, obviously, of bringing this quote-unquote mainstream, right? Way more people know, even in just the last 3 or 4 years, how legit these cars are. But take everybody back to, because I'm intrigued by this. I was fortunate enough in late 90s, early 2000s, I cut my teeth, you know, selling big wheels, selling rims in the hood. I know all about tax season. I know all about Freaknik. I know all about, you know, the Magic City Classic. And that was where our big times, right? That was when we sold wheels. But at the same time, that was 20s were just coming out, right? Asantes, right? The Assassins were the shit, right? We put those on. And Donks were getting there, right? Everybody was building that stuff. They didn't have as many names as they do now, but it was early. But that stuff was still twist-in spring lifts, right? That was truck springs on the front to get it jacked up, or even sometimes just just dropping the front cradle, re-welding it in, probably pretty badly. Adapters. You know, that nobody was getting custom three-piece wheels built. How do you go from you in the racing scene, the donk scene is just starting, and you're like, where does it come to? Like, you know what? 2,000 fucking horsepower on 26s, that's a good idea. Let's meld these things. I'm into drag racing.
It's not a good idea. No. Nothing any of us do is a good idea.
I want to know the progression of where it starts getting to where it is now. These are purpose-built cars. These aren't just jacked-up fucking cars.
Nah, so at that time, it was always about safety. So back then, you know, people would go to the rim shop, they'd put spacers on the vehicles, then they go out there, then the wheel fall off. Then they on the ground, then the car sideways. They might get air shocks. The air shock might, the airliner bust because it done touched the muffler in the back, all this kind of stuff. So to me, always wanted to go fast because I seen my uncles and everybody going fast, like I said earlier. So my main thing was about safety. So that's why we came up with the NDRA, which is the National Donk Racing Association, and that points towards safety. So we worked with FTI, Moser Engineering, and we came up with an axle package, an actual hardened stud to put into the wheels. So, as far as a big wheel car, a 26 with a tire on it weighs about 100 pounds. So if you get that rotational mass going, if it ain't bolted on right, it's going somewhere that you're not. So, you know what I mean? The car and the wheel will go two different places. So my main thing was about safety at that point. But I knew about race cars. I knew about coilovers. I knew about 9-inch rear ends. When everybody was jacking theirs up on a stock 7.5-inch rear end, I was putting a 9-inch rear end in it and welding brackets on it to make it work. So at that time, that's some of the stuff that I did do, you know?
Well, I mean, I remember, you know, the Z06 car obviously is probably that was your claim to fame, right? That was the one that put you on the map. That was one that was
this one had 24 karat gold on my necklace, right? Nice. I got that. That's me then.
So obviously the safety thing comes, but then like, I don't know how to phrase this. Like you said, the quality, right, is going up because of the safety, right? So you don't want, we all know, I'm not speaking out of turn, you know how bad these cars were in the late 90s. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Early 2000s.
Yeah, it was some stuff was good, but a lot of stuff was bad because it was no aftermarket. So now, like my partner's Q1, they have a big wheel kit to where you can just click one click and you get the entire kit of stuff to fit right on your car. You know, 20 years ago, I called Jakes, hey, I got a 1971 Impala. I need a set of coilover shocks. What you about to do with that? Why you need some coilovers for a 71 Impala? Those, we use those in the Destruction Derby. You know what I'm saying? So it was like some Demolition Derby cars 20 years ago. Now these cars are selling for $200,000-$400,000 right now. But it really was, it wasn't an aftermarket. It just came up with the know-how. And that's how I kind of backed up the Donk Master name, because I actually knew how to put these cars together and they actually stay together with 100 pounds on each corner, you know what I'm saying, running 150 miles in a quarter mile. So it basically came from my know-how, and then I started telling my people and my peers how to actually do them a little bit safer, where they would actually stay together.
It's wild because you've seen the progression of the quality. You know, we've done a shit ton of chassis for them, you know, and which is wild. And you get guys that are, you know, full chassis cars. I mean, badass paint and body, high end interiors. And I mean, they're building them like we build cars, like it, to build it to that level, especially when you see in a short progression. We look back in hot rods and muscle cars and stuff like that. Cars were pretty bad 20 years ago. Right, because of the aftermarket progressing and what we can do now that we can do. But it still, I think, progressed way faster in the donk world than it has in our world in the last 20 years as far as quality level.
Well, that market's young, right? It's like
they're moving.
Soaring. The rest of the stuff's been around a while, and I think maybe it peaked, right? They still got a long runway. But even for us, I mean, man, we were doing it 3-4 years ago. We were doing a ton of chassis. I mean, I started getting, like, it's been a little slow on them. But I started getting pretty damn well versed with, like, I could tell you exactly, you know, how you got to sit like a 72 Caprice convertible versus a coupe with 26s and where the top of that wheelhouse is and where that front tire is going to clip. And we got wide A-arms, narrow A-arms. We shift the wheelbase. So there's a lot. I mean, it's a totally different ballgame.
It is.
But frame rail step down instead of stepping up.
It's a new challenge.
Dude, it's funky. Like, so building chassis, what we do them, and it's like, it's so freaky when you sit back and look at one, because the front suspension and the whole front rail pitches forward so you can get all your caster in it. So you're looking at this frame and it looks totally opposite, right, of what it ordinarily would be. But yeah, we're rocking and rolling on them.
What's the hang up now? Like you said, it's always been about the aftermarket progressing. Is it tires? Is the tires the hang up right now?
As far as for a car that's going faster, yes. Right now we have one company, was actually one fella that actually making a 24-inch slick. His name is Black Flag Enterprise, and he actually makes the 24 slick for the 24-inch cars that we run in the class. But the 26s, we don't have a tire as of right now. We're trying to put that together with a couple different companies that we're working closely with. And we should be testing some stuff here real soon. So we should be able to change this game again and make these cars go a lot more faster.
How much faster is a 24-inch car with a slick than a 26-inch car on a radial?
I mean, depending on if you got a, say you got a heavyweight dump, and then you have a heavyweight G body, it's maybe a second or faster in between those two cars.
That's just tire only?
Yeah, and that's tire and weight. So you know, like a heavyweight dump can weigh 4,200 pounds, a heavyweight G body can weigh 3,500 pounds, 3,400 pounds. So, you know, the weight is there, but it's, you can have the same combination in both cars, but you can go faster just because of the weight. But the tire, you can hit it harder because it's an actual slick.
What's the reason everybody's just not racing on 24s? And they got it. Is it just because of the challenge of trying to make a car on 20?
Yeah, it's just because of the challenge and plus the don'ts. You know what I mean? The 71 through 76 Impala, everybody, the 26s is what we run on those cars in that class. So, they want to run 26 there, then that way the G bodies and all the other cars run 24s.
Wow. Someone's got to cheat a little bit and do like the fake white wall, like Evod's done.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So you're running a 22, but the sidewall, the wheel
looks like a 28.
Goes into a 28.
It's 20 inch beadlock.
Little trim ring goes on there. Or something.
We check though. We got a tape measure at every race.
What's going into that? What's the most creative that you've seen somebody? And obviously you're not going to call yourself out, right? Because I'm sure you're probably the most creative. What's the most creative you've seen somebody to skirt the rules?
I mean, as far as the motor combinations, like now a lot of people are building tube chassis cars. So it's basically going to, if you go back, like the 10.5-inch tire cars, where they be like stock front end, or stock location, all that kind of stuff on the suspension. They're basically starting to do that in the big wheel cars. So they would take a dunk, cut the front end off and tube the front end, tube the K-member, and it still be stock frame rails, but it still has a tube front end, tube back end, but the side frame rail, you would have 12 inches or 18 inches of stock frame rail in the car. Like stuff like that, where they're doing, you know, the normal stuff, gutting the doors, taking the glass out, putting Lexan in it, That's about the stuff as far as that. But as far as the farthest I went was my whole car is fiberglass, except for the quarter panels right now. So I'm actually the first dunk in the world to be fiberglass. Like my front end, my fenders, my hood, my doors, my trunk lid, my bumpers, all that stuff is fiberglass.
Anybody know how much you weigh?
I don't even know how much I weigh.
Damn.
Yeah, I was wondering where the progression, where it goes. I mean, when does it get to carbon fiber bodies and nitro motors?
When did it become pro mods? Yeah. Pro mod dunks? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it might be something floating around here in the next couple of months. We don't know. We just got to stay tuned. You know what I'm saying? The people who do fiberglass, you know, they know how to do carbon fiber. And the people who wrote weld chrome moly, they definitely weld titanium too. So we definitely going to have real soon.
Man, I'd like to see that.
Yeah. How'd you hook up with Casey Wagner? I know you've done a lot of stuff with Wagner Motors and stuff. And go ahead.
They're great people. We met them through a partnership with Whipple. So we did the stuff with Whipple. But like I got a shop here where I'm actually in my shop now. So we build a lot of cars. We build about 30 to 40 cars a year for the public. So we use a lot of Wagner products on the supercharged applications and some high RPM stuff. We lose a lot of Wagner stuff there. So nah, he's a real cool dude. And whenever I call, he answers the phone and we make it happen. But yeah, we've been using this stuff. So shoot, let me see, 2015, 16, maybe something like that.
He's a super nice guy and obviously extremely knowledgeable. Cool, I don't know if I wouldn't go that far. He's not exactly super fucking cool.
He's going to whip your ass.
I dare you to say that to his face.
He's gotten smaller. Yeah. He's gotten smaller. I ain't worried about it.
Casey just dropped off a 3.8 Whipple RHS block LS7 for me today.
Oh, yeah.
So he knows how to do those supercharged motors, man. That's he's the best in the business there.
Oh no, we did a 68 C10 truck. It's all patina on the outside. It has a 6.2 with mass heads, Wagner pulley system, and a 3-liter Whipple. So it makes about 750 horsepower to the tire on E85. So it does what it has to do.
Sweet. You can start calling us for some chassis, man. We can do chassis.
I got customers that want all different kinds of stuff. I mean, we can put something together for sure. We definitely can put some stuff together.
You say you got a shop and you're building cars for the public. Obviously, they're coming to you for your notoriety, right? And everybody's wanting a little something secret. Are you building street cars? Are you building race cars or a combination of both?
We do all different kinds of cars. So we actually build a lot of street cars. We do build race cars, grudge cars. We tune a ton of grudge cars that do a lot of street racing and stuff like that. And then another thing we do the car giveaways. So we actually do 8 to 10 car giveaways a year also that we build here at the shop. We have I got 5 employees down here. So we push them out. We can do an LS swap with suspension, drivetrain, wiring, AC, everything in about 3 weeks. So three and a half weeks, we have a car in here not running and pull up the lift, running and driving.
Damn, we got to send some stuff down.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. you got any extra capacity, man? I got a bunch of projects for you.
We just set up an appointment and just had the cash. Because the main thing about it is the time. So, you know, just like everybody else, the parts take a lot of time, but we stock a lot of stuff that we normally use. And, you know, we work with a lot of our companies for so long. So a lot of our partners, we have the parts and we get them in the car and out. I mean, we do it all the time. So.
What do you do? What do you do when a guy comes in? He wants to build a badass car, right? He wants to build. Yeah. He wants to build a race car, right? You race, right? You race.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, I got all the money, but I want to be faster than you.
Yeah, I'm like, well, for my car, what it costs, but you still got to learn how to drive. You know what I'm saying? that's the first thing I tell him that every time. I say, okay, you want to be faster than me, right? But can you have somebody who drive better than me? They look at me for a second. I'd be like, you still got to know how to drive the car. I mean, it's all about the tuning and all that. And I got some cars out there that's actually faster than my car that's running on the track right now. But I won't say I'm connected to it. we have race cars out there that's really fast. I mean, we got some 3-second cars out there, some 4-second cars, all the way on up to the street car stuff. So we got some pretty badass cars out there.
What have you seen? Transition a little bit. What have you seen? For again, we run in different circles, right? Let's just call a spade a spade. How have you seen our world, SEMA, aftermarket, the muscle car, that kind of high end world? How have you seen your reception into that?
Oh yeah. I mean, over the years, it was a progression thing. So like in the very beginning, people be looking at me crazy. Like, what are you doing? You know what I'm saying? And they kept looking. But the turning point was when I actually raced the late great Ken Block, man, in the Hoonicorn. So when Ken Block and Scotto gave me a call, and said, man, you want to run the Hoonicorn? I was like, oh yeah. You know what I'm saying? So we went straight over there to California and ran the Hoonicorn. And that's when I actually seen it turn. I'm talking about it just transitioned to a whole nother level of people actually knowing who I was. Cause I was racing big wheel cars and just drag racing in general for 20 years. And then we came up and ran Ken Block. And I'm talking about it went to a whole nother level.
So you think his stamp of approval in the aftermarket world changed things?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it definitely did, because they actually got to see me in a different light. And what it was, and we really appreciate that. Shout out to Scotto, the Hoonigans, and everybody over there, man. But I mean, it was really a pleasure, and it actually, that stamp, you know, he's the greatest. To me, he's the greatest rally car driver there is. I mean, I don't know nobody better than him. You know what I'm saying? And the stuff he did for the automotive community, like he did a lot of stuff for motorsports in general.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Legend right there.
Yeah, hell of a guy.
Oh yeah, that's a real pleasure.
Were you surprised at how fast that fucking Mustang was?
Yeah, who was
I? I was sitting over there. That's why I think my gap sauce might be empty right now. he just gapped me. I'm talking, it was like a rubber band. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know my car makes a lot of power and it's really loud, but that Hoonigan going and it's hitting the rev limiter about, boop, 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 boop. Man, that thing shot out on me like a rubber band. I never seen nothing like it. Not no road racing. You know what I'm saying? That's a legit 7-second car in the room, like for real.
I've never got to see it run in person. Obviously, all the videos and stuff like that, but I've always wondered just sheer acceleration. What it?
Oh no, it's crazy. I'm talking about it is crazy.
That's nuts. What's in the street racing world, right? The grudge racing, right? Racing for money. All these tracks. I remember Reynolds, Georgia was the place we used to go all the time for off the books racing shit like that. Some fun back then. It was, you know, Mike Moran and Fox Body Mustangs, and you had some fast ass shit back then.
Oh yeah.
What's the sketchiest place you've been at where it started getting dicey for some grudge racing?
As far as the track service or the people,
man, you know, the stories I want.
Both.
I mean, in South Carolina, we got this place called 21, right? It's a road, it's Highway 21. It's down in the country town of Smokes, Ruffin, Walterboro. I don't know if y'all ever heard of those places before, but
Smokes, Ruffin, no. Walterboro.
I'm talking about those roads, right? It's pitch black, pine trees for miles. I'm talking about ditches on both sides of the road, and it's a baseball field where there's somebody coming in with a generator and the big lights, like on a construction site. So everybody that gathered over there, we'll put all the money together and go racing. But the sketchiest one ever was when my homeboys put all the money together. I think we probably raced for maybe 20, 30 grand or something like that. And while I'm in the car on the trans brake, about to take off, somebody starts shooting. I said, oh, I'm in the car. We raced for 20, 30 grand. I got to get the money. You know what I'm saying? I'm in the street. Trans brake off. I'm in a Mustang, in a Fox body. All I was thinking about was, man, did somebody get shot out here? You know what I'm saying? Like, did somebody really get shot out here? But, I mean, I was raised for the money, so I couldn't stop back up. All the money would have been gone. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if they did it or not, but we came through. I gapped them, of course. So that was easy. But
did you stop at the top?
Huh?
Or did you stop at the top end, or you just keep going?
Oh, well, you got to get the fucking money.
These guys are going to get the money.
Yeah, yeah, my partner would get the money. So yeah. Me and my homeboy, we already, our trailer is down the street. Uh-huh. So once the car down the street, you know what I'm saying? I'm going straight to the trailer. That's how we always did it. Every time we street race, we go straight to the trailer. If the police did not park the trailer down the road, I got enough radiator to make it there. And that's where I'm going.
Hype men handle the money. Drivers, yeah, drivers getting it loaded up.
He gone.
Because if you're racing for that type of money, that thing comes out once that night.
Yeah, and I'm talking, this was over 20 years ago. You know what I'm saying? This is, you know, over 20 years ago. Another incident after that with the big wheel stuff was in 2015 when I went down to Miami, Florida in 2015, and that's when we really kicked this big wheel racing stuff off. I raced my partner and my two fly down there in Miami, and we raced the two dunks. in the street on MLK, which is a very big weekend in Miami where they bring out all the new Impalas, all the new cars, all the new dunks. And we went down there and racing. I'm talking, we had maybe 3,000-4,000 people out there in the road, helicopters flying. It's on YouTube from about 2015. And we actually raced. And of course, I got the money that day too. So that was a good time.
Man, them the damn Cubans, the Mexicans, Latino, they're bringing the shit.
Oh, it's a whole bunch of everybody down there.
They got what's the deal with that all-wheel drive dunk? Have you seen the videos of that thing?
Yeah, that's a fella named FYE out of Florida. He got an all-wheel drive twin turbo dunk. He's still trying to figure it out, but it should do something once he get it figured out. But he got one down there. He's the first to do it down there too.
This thing's nuts. Fucking nuts.
Oh yeah.
I gotta see that.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot easier to package than the shit that we're trying to build.
Yeah, you just like hang lift it higher, put bigger. I mean, you got all the room. You're taking the biggest car and raising it. Like, y'all don't ever have to worry about fucking hood clearance issues ever.
Oh, nah. Unless you start putting one of those 481X or them Newlands in there, that'd be something a little different.
Yeah, still, you got all the room in the world under that thing. Back to the Fox body. What was your setup then? That was a 10.5-inch tire car, right?
Yeah, I had a 10.5-inch tire car. Small block, two-stage nitrous.
340.
Always ran LS motors.
Huh? 347?
No, LS motor. I was always had a what? Chevrolet and everything. Yeah, I mean, I ran the Fox body for the week, but the motor was always Chevrolet. It had to be that. we had a two-stage nitrous, 440 cubic inch LS motor, and it made a little over 1,000. I think that car made probably 1,200, 1,300 or something like that.
What trans?
We had a power glide in that one. I had a glide in it with an 8.8 ring in it. Little hatchback Mustang. Matter of fact, we had called that one at that time. Let me see. So that car was called Osama bin Laden because they were looking for Osama bin Laden all the time.
That's good.
I'm talking, we won a ton of money with that one, dude. We won a ton of money with that one. But it was a pretty good car. We had it hooked up pretty good. I'm talking, we had dragged the bump in the street with that thing. But like I said, that was a long time ago. So you know what I mean? That was.
Hey, everybody, we're all, preface this since this is going like we got a couple of listeners in Canada and in Australia. Well, I think we've got like four guys and they keep sending messages like I'm the last listener in Australia. I'm like, well, y'all need to gang up. Like, there's four guys that listen in Australia, but we'll preface this is all way back in the day. But I'm getting fucking chills thinking about the old street racing days, right? Because I mean. My wife was right there with me. We lived for that shit. Like, there was nothing better than, this is different than, I mean, I'm not going to get into the whole thing about the takeovers and the shit now, but that shit, maybe we're just old. It was different back then, right? There was there was none of that. You'd have a little bit of drama and stuff like that, but it was always about money and stuff, but everybody was there to fucking race. And when you knew that car was coming out, right? And that was the grudge match, right? And the trailer was parked down, especially on big power Fox body cars and the sketchiness of what was the power they were putting down. This was obviously early 2000s and stuff. And man, it was fucking fun.
Oh yeah.
We didn't get any of that here.
Fuck. It was fun.
It's like here, fucking Uncle Rico.
Yeah, I know.
To go back. You ever wish you could go back?
I do wish I could go back.
We're lucky to catch a Fox body out on like Lake Cook, you know, out on some 4-lane road that you'd line up next to, but we didn't have that. Out here.
Yeah, a little bit streets of Woodfield.
Yeah, maybe. At that point, we were too busy, like, just work and never got out to play, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That was we were servicing shit, too. So, I mean, we would open up the shop late. We were changing out all the drag radials. We were filling nitrous bottles. We were doing that kind of shit up until about 11 o'clock because midnight's when everything kind of kicked off. We were downtown. Everybody was racing downtown in Birmingham. So we were kind of the spot. So,
you sound like you're like a super fan. Did you ever race anything? What were you driving? I know that Ford Probe wasn't going,
going up against anybody. That Ford Probe was long gone. It was the Probe that totaled, then the Dakota, then this was Civic. This was Civic days. It had Civic hatchback and Civic coupe.
So you were racing that?
Yeah, we were racing the coupe. I mean, the coupe was a show car. The hatchback was a race car.
Yeah. What kind of motor you had in the hatchback?
It was a B18C. It was a dual overhead cam, supercharged. Yeah. It'd do 1090s back then in 2002. 2010.
Oh, no, that's fucking fast.
Fast, baby. You was fast back then.
Yeah, it was. There's a quick shit. These are all magazine cars. This is Nopey. This is back in the day. Oh, all that kind of shit. Nopey. Yeah.
They bring Nopey back. Matter of fact, shout out to Isaac and on board. They're bringing Nopey back. You know.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I mean Isaac. I just talked to him the other day. They actually bringing Nopey back.
That's fucking wild. You want to talk about a company, not to go off on a tangent, but if you want to, like, look up Nopey, the company, and what they did, starting off with just a small little, like, mom-pa Volkswagen motor fucking shop, and then what it did turned into, like, I guess the height of that shit was, what, 2000, 2001?
Yeah, maybe some of the early 2000, 2003, 2004.
Yeah.
I remember going in Charlotte. I know they had a big crazy party in Myrtle Beach in Charlotte. So yeah, that had to be at least 20 years ago.
Yeah, we used to go to when it used the big show was downtown Atlanta, and then it got so big the city kicked them out, and they had to go to the racetrack. They had to go to Hamilton or whatever down to the circle track. And dude, no lie, like, you know fucking Columbus, you know those parking lots, 100 times what Columbus is.
No shit.
Every single hotel, it's fucking nuts. It's absolutely like nuts.
Tuner Nationals.
Yeah, it was Tuner. It was mini trucks. I mean, there was donks rolling in. At that point, it was just like, you're into, like, for young people, they knew how to fucking do it. And like, we always talk about, like, our shows are so fucking slow and old. It's a different demographic. Bikini contest. I mean, then that shit ran late. Foam fucking pit parties and every damn band you could think of. Different era back then.
Oh no, that was crazy. I definitely remember all that stuff.
I want to know your take on this, because over the last probably 5 to 6 to 7 years, I know my wife has always been into it, right? Because we did for a living. Do you find that more white women or more white men are into donks? Because every white woman I ever come across talk about, oh, I'd love to have a donk. They always want a fucking donk.
I mean, everybody is. I mean, the owner of FTI and Silver Sport Transmissions, he's driving the NHRA called Paul Lee. I'm talking Paul Lee wants a donk so bad right now. I'm talking he got Lamborghinis and Top Fuel funny car, but... and Gator Nationals last year, I pulled his race car to the line with a dunk last year. Oh man, he got a ride in it while they actually store his funny car behind the dunk. Oh yeah, that he sold on it. He got to have a dunk. I mean, everybody wants them right now, especially if the top go down. Oh, they go crazy.
How's that make you feel at the end of the day? That,
I mean, I love it. I just love to see all my supporters smile, man. I mean, as far as making somebody else happy, because you got to realize a lot of people would never get to build these kind of cars, and we blessed to have 20 or 30 of them. Like, I'm sitting in the shop right now. I got Pro Charge one in here. You know what I mean? Turbo ones over there, twin turbo ones over there. I mean, I love it. I just love that the culture is growing and everybody get to see it, and it's well respected. And that's what I like about it.
What's the car to have to start with, anyways?
Year, 70, I mean, model. 72.
A 71 Chevrolet Impala is what everybody wants. The 71 Chevrolet Impala. That's the most rarest one of all the Impalas. They only made about 4,500 convertibles, and that's what everybody want. Then it's the 73 Caprice, and then it's the 75 Caprice as the most sought after donks there is.
Cooper convertible.
It got to be a convertible. I mean, it got to be a convertible. You know what I mean? You can go 2-door, 4-door convertible station wagon, but the donk, just the 71 through 76 Caprice and Impala, that's the only year of the dunk right there. So they want the 71, 73, or the 75. That's what they're looking for.
Why'd that body style just get to be the dunk? Why is that the most desirable?
Yeah, so the dunk, the term actually originated in Miami, Florida. So it came about in Miami, Florida, and they call it a dunk because when you get in that car, you got cleaned up and it was painted up nice, you act a dunk in.
You act like an ass.
That's what you do, you know what I'm saying? You get clean, you have a good time, you have fun, you go downtown, you know what I'm saying, and you have a good time, and that's where it actually originated from. So just that term for that car, that's just what it is. 71 through 76, Caprice Impala, that's a donk, that's it.
Why did the boxes and the bubbles not ever do what the donks did? Because just too new?
I think because it's the line, the body lines. Because, you know what I'm saying, all those Chevrolets was taxi cabs or police cars because there was, you know what I mean, at that time, that's just that body style. But I think the Dunk took off because it's a lot older than those other, than the bubble or the boxes. But I mean, they just don't make cars like that no more. So like the metal on the Dunk is way thicker than a box Chevy. Even from a 76 to a 77, they're made entirely different. So, well, I just think it's how the car is made.
They're also what we grew up with that was a little more attainable, right? It wasn't a Cadillac. Yeah. It was what our grandma or grandfather actually had or might have had, yep, and what we thought was like.
That's why it's so popular in Miami, because all the grandparents moved down there.
Yeah, and all the cars, all the dogs down there, probably. Probably on that
time, 100%.
Oh, no, and plus it was cheaper. So you can imagine. So, like, right now, those Dunks are selling for $300,000, $400,000 completed cars. Like, if you get an all-original one, they sell them some on Meekum. I don't see them go for $40,000, $50,000 for an unrestored, just a regular one. But 10 years ago, I could have go down the street and get one out of somebody else for $2,500. You know what I'm saying? Like, one that didn't have a motor in it, I can get it for $1,000. Right now, if you go look for a 71 with no motor in it, in Minnesota, with rotten frame, $10,000, $5,000. I'm talking about just the trim alone is a couple thousand dollars because they don't make it. There's no aftermarket for it, and plus people want the original stuff anyway. So I mean the you know what I mean, with the internet and social media, the stuff we done, I mean it's going out of this world.
No one's messing with the Buick Pontiac old stuff.
Yeah, what now? The Buick Pontiac is not as popular as the Dunk stuff. But we do it because they on the same frame. They have some interchangeable parts like the Pontiac Grandeville, the Delta 88, the Centurion. They all have the same convertible top, the window mold, and some of that stuff is the same, but it just didn't take off like with the Dunk stuff did.
It just ain't the pinnacle. It's entry level.
It's not the 69 Camaro or the Chevelle.
Oh, it ain't a top dog.
What, fuck, that threw me off.
Sorry.
I apologize. Why you? Why was it because you were one of the first to do it? Is it because you had a more drag racing background? Is it because you look at things differently? Why the fuck are you so special and are the Donk Master?
I mean, I just thank God. I mean, I don't know. God put me here to serve the purpose, to educate the people on the big wheel racing and what's going on. But I mean, it takes a lot of work. You know what I'm saying? People at the time thought I was crazy because I was trying to put 28-inch wheels on a car and run 10 seconds. Like, my first car that I actually got in the magazine with about 10 years ago, I wanted to run 10 seconds on 28-inch wheels. So we actually put a 572 big block in the car, did all the nitrous, you know what I'm saying, put everything together. But it just, as far as the people around me wanted to see me win, like, they thought it was crazy at first. Now, I ain't gonna tell you a lie. When I went into there and talked to my tuner and said, I'm gonna put a 572 in this car with 5,500 pounds. I'm gonna put 20-inch wheels on it. I'm gonna run 10 seconds with these rubber band tires. They just looked at me like, I don't think you about to do that shit. You know what I'm saying? So it was just a lot of work, a lot of downtime. You know what I'm saying? After they seen me not giving up, they started helping it, and we started winning, and we started pushing it forward. I mean, that's really just a lot of work in the team. You know what I mean? That's really what it was.
You talk about the team. I met some of your team out there at SEMA and stuff. And, man, I don't know them. In the brief time of talking to them, whatever, super impressed with the quality of the work that they're wanting to put out, right? I could instantly tell of like, oh, shit, this is legit. Like, what? And no offense, but. I've heard you talk before about most of your team that's with you now is team that you've grown up with, right? That you've brought.
Yeah.
So talk about the dynamic of guys, because I know there has to be that story and you don't have to name anybody and stuff, but guys that you grew up with, that you've been doing this forever, that they didn't grow or build their skill set like the rest of the team, right? And y'all are friends and you grew up together and you want to bring them along, but has everybody just been growing the same way you've been growing and has been gotten as good as you have?
I mean, as far as the foremost, yes, the core team, we have grown and kept elevating and doing what we're doing. But as far as a lot of people around, some of them fell off because they couldn't take the load or they just stopped believing. To me, I look at it as they just weak. I mean, everybody over here, we're not weak. You know what I'm saying? This is not for the weak. Y'all build cars. You know how I get. You 11 o'clock in the morning, in the nighttime, you the busted knuckles, you eat all day, you drinking, you living off pizza and beer. They don't, you know what I mean? They don't want to sleep on the floor every time. They want to stay in the Four Seasons every time, but that's not what it is. But you know what I mean? The team just had to be strong, and that's really what it was. Once they showed me too much signs of weakness, I don't want to mess with them or even talk to them no more, because that's not, you know what I mean? That's not what, how we were built and how we brought up. But I mean, everybody on my team is well accomplished. I mean, shoot, I got people on my team got Emmys, college degrees, professors. I mean, even the guy who makes all the videos, you know what I mean? He went to school to is over bit content. I mean, graphic designer. So, you know what I mean? Everybody around us is on the top and we're doing real well. And like I say, I mean, you can't be weak when you're running with me. You know what I'm saying? That's just what it takes.
That shows, obviously, he's built a couple fucking cars. He talks about the 11 o'clock at night. Oh, yeah. He's talking about living off pizza and beer. It's you can't fake that
weak.
Shit.
Yeah, there's no successful car builder that's weak. Like it'll rip the heart out of your chest and stomp on it. Yeah. Trying to get one across the finish line.
And every single one of them better have a strong fucking family too, because they all got to put up with the dumb shit that you're doing. You talk about the Emmy for content. Obviously, a whole large portion of your business, your brand, and your identity is social media, is YouTube content, is Instagram stuff. You've probably had 10 fucking channels, and I was searching around today, whatever, Dongmaster and Dongmaster Racing, Dongmaster TV, and then Big Wheel Bikes. And I know, is that your wife that's running the Big Wheel Bike?
Yeah, that's my wife, Baby Girl Florida. She has a bike on 34. We built a race car. She has a 2000 Camaro race car, turbocharged motor in it.
I saw a video of her just putting on the bumper for the first time.
Oh, yeah. And we had to chuck her panties after that. You know what I'm saying? She slid on the bumper. It came down. Once she came around, I'm talking about eyes big like this. Not even what's going on. But we got, you know what I'm saying? We got her straight, and she loved it. So now she's racing a lot more. And then, you know what I mean? To me, she loved the bike stuff, but I'd rather see in the car more times than the bike. But you know what I mean? That's what she loved. That's how I met her. So we go keep on both sides of it. So we just make sure she's safe on both sides, and that's what it is for her.
Well, but where I was going with that was we talked about shit talking and the showmanship and keeping everything on wrap, like the bullshit about racing and how important that is. But way back 20 years ago, there was no social media. So How is the social media game, not on your brand building, but on the grudge racing and the racing side of things, changed things?
I mean, we still use social media to talk trash on that too. You know what I'm saying? Now we just got a bigger fan base to talk trash too. So instead of the crowd saying, oh, you got 20,000 people like, oh.
The whole world sees it now.
Yeah. So now, you know what I mean? Now when you start talking trash, that social media, boy, it's either they go either blow or go. And a lot of times when they're racing me, they blow because they don't know. You know what I mean? Pressure bust pipes and they can't handle them. 20,000 people laughing at him. You know what I'm saying? I love it. I mean, if somebody laugh at me, I'm definitely going to get you back. I can promise you that.
Basically, every street race back in the day was the best scene from your favorite movie, 8 Mile, where that basically a rap battle on the drag strip was all it was. And it was just about like what you brought, how slow it was, how fast mine is, what you look like, all that kind of stuff.
How many guys talk a bunch of shit and then show up with garbage and can't back it up?
A whole bunch of them. I mean, I don't want a lot more than we lose, but the tend to that is we try to get them bet like how they talk. So that's
the key, right?
You know what I'm saying? Like me, I can look at somebody car within 15 seconds. I can tell you how fast it is by looking at a couple different things on their vehicle. So if they talk, if they bet how they talk, and I know we got them covered, I'm going to keep pouring gasoline on that fire. And then let them go to bet the bank, and we leaving out of there paid as hell. That's how we like to do it.
What's a chump, if a guy's talking shit and he comes out there, what's a chump bet? If he comes out with, I'm going to race for a grand, is that a chump bet?
Yeah, it costs more than a grand to get here, brother. You got to come a little bit better than that.
All right.
That's the thing I tell him. It costs more than that. It costs more than that to load the fuel in the race car, the truck, the trailer. You know what I'm saying? If we come in, depending on how far we go, it costs more than a grand just for me to get here.
But then at that point, they got a whole crowd watching, and they don't want to look cheap, right?
Nope.
So they're gonna come out. They're gonna come out of the pocket, and you know you already got them at that point.
Oh yeah, and at that point, my next move will be I'm gonna pull out a loaf and throw it on their hood. Be like, what y'all get? whatever I drop in the hood, if y'all can match that, we can go. That's it. This match what we got right here. Let's get it rocking. That's it.
What's the average race go for? What's considered like a good purse?
I mean, a good purse is $5,000 aside. You know what I'm saying? If you got a couple people betting, but if you go up, you know, $10,000, $20,000 aside. But, you know, we don't race for $100,000 aside. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You just got to know your opponent and who you're racing. But a lot of times, you know, a lot of them grudge races, you know, $10,000, $20,000 aside, $40,000 parts. Those is always good.
So let me ask you a question. Casey Wagner is my boy, right? So let's say you're lined up, you got $100,000 on the line, and it shits a pulley right at the line. That fucking that fucking supercharger pulley just disappears.
He fucking going to Wisconsin.
Are you going to Wisconsin?
I'm gonna call it right as soon as we done lose all our money. Casey, I need some free kits or something, because I'm talking about, send me something to sell or do something. I got to buy that. We can't just think about it. Not like that.
Casey and his boys are too big to talk shit.
Well, I was going to say, what if Casey was way smaller? What would that conversation would go?
Get that farm strength going for him.
So tell us about the fucking 2024 city-to-city, state-to-state show tour. What the fuck is going on with this?
Oh, I mean, we're going to a lot of different places. I mean, we're going to the first race we're actually going to go to is Trigger Man in Orangeburg. Drag Strip Trigger Man is a big-time grudge race for me and him, the same age. So we came at the same time doing grudge racing. That's in Orangeburg. We gonna be in Georgia. I'm talking. We got a big race in Texas called the YouTubers Call Out.
Where are you going?
All the big YouTubers come and race. That's a colossal thing for social media, because we have like Freddie LXX, On the Gas, Weston, Lacey Blair, Zach. I'm talking about. We have Demonology. All those big YouTubers come together, and we all share content, and we race, talk trash, bet some money, have a good time. And that show normally goes viral for about 2 weeks after it actually is done. So after that Sunday, we have about 200 to 300 YouTubers actually just dropping content day after day, hour after hour, about the entire event and what's going on. Like last year, we had Hot Rod Magazine coming there, Motor Trend. We had PRI out there. We had some people from SEMA there. We had a lot of different people, Nitrous Outlet, Boostane. I'm talking about a lot of different companies actually coming on board and helping us with the show. And that's a big one. That's big YouTubers Call Out. That's a big one. That's April 13th in Texas and at Texas Motorplex.
Are you making more money off YouTube or street racing nowadays?
The street racing, I retired. You know, I retired. So you know what I mean. We do a lot of merch stuff like that. Stuff, you know what I mean. The stuff in my shop, I sell parts. You know, stuff like that is pretty good. So I don't have the street race no more. I didn't street race in a long time. Matter of fact, about 5 years, maybe 4 or 5 years, maybe. Dude. So we try to stay on the track and do it on the track now. Because I don't have a lot of street racing, but now I'm getting a little bit older. I don't want to do too much street racing too much no more.
Hey, everybody. Josh here from Oil & Whiskey. We're excited to announce that Ironclad is launching a new Ironclad original, Borderland, with host Vincent Rocco Vargas. Vince, a Hollywood actor, former Army Ranger, and Border Patrol Special Operations veteran, offers a distinct viewpoint on border-related issues as the grandson of a Mexican immigrant. Take a look at this teaser for the upcoming Ironclad original, Borderland. It's hitting all major platforms on February 22nd. You don't want to miss it.
On any given day, there can be more than 10,000 apprehensions on America's southern border. Some have crossed snake-infested jungles with their children on their backs to escape gang violence and to find a better life for their families in pursuit of the American dream. Some, well, we don't know where they're coming from or what they want. My name is Vincent Rocco Vargas. I'm a United States Army combat veteran and a former member of Border Patrol's Search, Trauma, and Rescue Unit. On the new Ironclad original, Borderland, each week I talk to people to better understand the causes and effects of the border crisis. We cut through the partisan talking points. We're not interested in perpetuating fear. We're interested in seeking truth, hearing what's really going on America's borderland. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube at This Is Ironclad.
back in the back, I know you had to have dreams. Anybody that wants to be a fucking winner has dreams. But when you were out there racing that yard cart, did you have fucking any idea that you'd be talking about the shit that you just talked about with the show?
Never in a million years. You know what I'm saying? As I got older and start realizing, you know what I'm saying? I'm a father. I got five kids. So as I'm trying to teach them the stuff that I wasn't taught to do it a better way. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, I mean, I would never thought about this in a million years. I can't tell you no lie. Like, I'd never seen any of this stuff coming. It just, once it started coming, I just kept progressing and trying to grow and to capture it. While we lived in the moment, but we steady wanted to capture it and stay in it for the long haul. So, I mean, that's really what it's about.
It ain't no secret. You've talked about it. You've got it on your social media and stuff. You had to go away for a little bit, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You got a little slap on the hand, right?
Yeah. Had to sit down for a couple months, about 6-7.
had to sit down, right? I don't. Are you a different person coming out of that business-wise? I don't care nothing about rehabilitation. I don't care nothing about any of that kind of shit. I'm talking about the time to think away from the noise. What did you learn and what did you reconstruct during that time?
I mean, in that time, I actually sat down and focused and grew. So, like, I actually got a channel myself, talked to my team on the phone every day. So I actually had to learn analytics with social media. I had to learn algorithms. I sat down and read a lot of books about business and growing and trials and tribulations. I mean, through that time, I mean, I learned a lot. I talked to God a lot, you know what I'm saying? And we kept moving forward with it. But the craziest thing about that whole situation is now I have my own strain in 27 cookie stores in California right now.
Isn't that something, the way that works out?
I actually had to sit down for 7 months, but we actually got out. And the one you met at SEMA, my head of business, I'm talking about right now, after the TV show aired and they seen it all, I mean, shoot, I'm talking about within 8 or 9 months, we were sitting at a table with a farm in California. And, oh, man, I'm talking about we got some of the best stuff on the planet. But it's only in California, though. You know what I'm saying? It's only in California.
That don't matter. But let's just think about that for a second. That's the same, a little different scale, obviously, but the epitome of fucked up priorities. And that's like getting in trouble for being a class clown in high school and then getting out of detention and they ask if you want to do a comedy bit at the fucking talent show, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, you're pretty good at making kids laugh. You want to come up here and do it for the thing? Fuck off. Like,
how much are you going to pay me?
So I can make money in California doing the same shit I just fucking did 7 months for? Fuck you.
And to be able to do it in California, too, that's something.
Yeah. Dude, that's and, you know, that's what it's about. It's just becoming a smarter, savvy businessman. So it's just positioning what some people thought was negative, but it actually was very positive. So just like everything we do in business, I mean, it's growth in different places. And the some stuff people don't want, these people over here really do want. So I might as well just, you know what I mean, cater to the people that really would want it. So that's what we did. And we actually turned it around. And it's doing very well in California for us. So that helps also.
There's got to be a good marketing opportunity for that to show just how good that shit is. Like, this stuff is legit. Trust me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I did a little time.
So good I went to prison for it.
Right.
So, ought to be illegal.
There's got to be
in most states.
Got to be an angle on that, man.
It got to be illegal. But, yeah, the brand is Lifted Farms. So, Lifted Farms, you know what I mean? Shout out to Lifted Farms and Sean and everybody over there. But, yeah, we... it's top notch. I'm talking about some stuff, 33%, 38%. I'm talking about it's top of the line over there.
Who's going to make it legal first? South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, or Mississippi?
I know it ain't South Carolina. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking it might be Georgia sounds more than to me, but South Carolina, I don't see South Carolina right now. Not at all right now.
But, Georgia probably the first one.
But Illinois, right? Just any crooked-ass state that needs the tax revenue, right?
If you can get the taxes for it, if you can get Illinois.
Illinois and California. Yeah. The most, like, left-leaning states.
Illinois make murder legal if they could tax it.
Yeah.
I guarantee it.
Yeah, that'd be good.
you want to kill that dude? That's fine. Get a permit.
You know that.
Fucking crooked-ass politicians. Tell us about the They Clone Tyrone movie promo for Netflix.
Oh, no, that was huge. I mean, the Netflix thing is definitely was huge. Shout out to the multicultural team over there. Shout out to everybody over there at Netflix. So that came about maybe 3 years before it actually happened. And the only reason it didn't happen 3 years ago because of COVID. So when COVID happened, they actually was filming the movie. And then they was going to actually go into production and start the promotion for it. But when Corona came so long, they had to keep pushing it back and keep pushing it back. So my head of business development, Stephen Morrison, he actually, you know, maybe kept in contact with the whole team over there at Netflix. And then one day they just called and said, hey, we want you to build this car because the donkey stuff is in the movie. So, you know, they clone Tyrone is Jamie Foxx, John Boyega, and Tiana Paris. So they actually kept talking to us, see if we could build a car. They wanted to have it for May the 20th. They called us on January. I was like, yeah, it's no problem. We got enough time to do it. Yeah, it's no problem. They actually turned around and called us in March and said they want it done for May. So I was like, well, how much time we going to have? We were like, you might have about 45 to 60 days. I said, okay, about 60 days would be good. Turns out it was 38 days. Shit. So we actually took a dunk from my partner, Carlos Miller. I don't know, y'all know Carlos Miller from 85 South, Nick Cannon Wildin' Out.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So he actually had a car to shop. We actually got his car. We outfitted for what they wanted, put a TV in the trunk of LS swap AC. I'm talking about lights, everything on the car. My man Jughead did the music and everything in it. And we went on a 3-city promo tour with it after we did the photo shoot. So we did a photo shoot in May. We was on the road June and July, all the way up until August. We went to Miami to the African American Film Festival. We went to Essence Fest. And then we actually did the red carpet premiere, which I actually drove the car with John Boyega and Tiana Paris sitting on the back, pull up to the red carpet, playing some Marvin Gaye. They got out. The whole red carpet went crazy. They was like, we never seen nothing like it before. And then, you know what I mean? It was a game changer and it put us on a global market. So not only people known us in the United States, I mean, I have people in Switzerland, Australia, Netherlands. Like, I'm talking about, you got to use a little translator button on Instagram to talk to somebody. You know what I'm saying? So that Netflix thing was out of this world. And the team, we knocked it all out and got it done. And it was a good time.
You got any of those fucking sheiks and Saudis wanting them donks yet? They like fucking cool shit. You always get those emails of, you know?
They definitely do. Now, we have a real broad custom base. So we have some customers out of Canada. And then there, one of them actually lives in Egypt. So we actually just finished a Chevelle for somebody who lives in Egypt who actually does real estate development. So he actually is building real estate around the pyramids that he's going to take his Chevelle from Canada to Egypt and have it over there. So yeah, we on an international scale right now. And I'm talking about it's like I'm saying, this stuff I would never actually dreamed of in a million years, but it's actually happening. You know what I'm saying? It's crazy. I mean, all I can do is say, thank you, Lord.
Canadians have like real fucking currency. I guess they got to come here and trade some rocks for some real like U.S. money. Canada don't fucking count.
Hockey pucks and donuts, I think.
Yeah, Canada, that's not a.
You don't hear a lot about Canada.
No, we shouldn't consider it a country. It should just be a place.
I don't know what they do up there.
You're pissing off three followers in Canada.
Devin Keith and me are fucking tight now. Just don't post no more pictures of your kid. Like, we're fucking good.
They got Canada. I'm talking about Canada is big. Toronto and all the boys up there in Canada, they love old school cars. I'm talking about we done did a couple of them up there in Canada.
Really?
He got a dark. Oh, yeah. I'm talking about the first one I did in Canada. We put 28-inch wheels on it. We put the carbon fiber Corvette ceramic 16-inch brakes on it. You know how much the Z01 carbon fiber brakes cost?
Oh, yeah.
15
yeah.
grand.
Yeah. We actually put a set on a dunk, and it's in Canada riding around on 28s right now.
Can you understand what the fuck they're saying, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, they talk English.
They don't talk English.
Yeah, they talk good English, man. They cool fellas, man. They got it's a lot of cars up there in Toronto now.
Do they do 28-inch snow chains?
Nah, he don't drive. They don't drive in the snow. They don't drive in the snow.
Yeah. Your first car and story about that car. Very first car.
I still get it. Matter of fact, it's right here. I think I still get it. So I actually have a 74 Nova that I still get. It's outside right now. So I bought that car when I was 16 years old. I bought it out of paper called the Carolina Trader. So I actually paid $900 for it. It was all primed down. It didn't have no motor, nothing in it. I actually went, put a small block 400 in it. And that was around the time of Big Time, it was Cash Money Records and all them boys, and they said they had the Gucci seats and the Burberry and all that stuff. So I actually have Gucci interior and my 74 Nova. I raced it a lot. You know what I mean? I used to drive to school, drive to college, and I did a lot of motor swaps to it. I mean, I still get it. It still got the suspension and everything on it from 20 years ago from the last time I drove it. But it's a 1974 Nova, and I learned a lot from it. And I'm never going to sell it. I'm going to keep it.
And you didn't wreck it? Never wrecked it?
Nah, I hit a couple curves a lot of time, and I ain't never.
I'd say, what do you think? It's 95% of the people that have been on this podcast, we talk about the first car.
Yeah.
Everyone wrecked it.
We've done 120 something episodes, and I bet you
110 of them wrecked the first
110
car.
Of them have wrecked their first car.
Oh, no, I still got mine.
Inglorious.
Mine is exactly the same. I still got it.
He's a better fucking driver. Yeah.
You got plans for it? You got to have something that you're dreaming up for it one day.
Yeah, nice. I want to do a 6-speed. I'm thinking about doing a 6-speed turbo, twin turbo setup or something like that. Something like a Pro Touring type thing, something I can actually drive. Because, you know, back in the day, I had 18-degree heads, 4-6 motor, 2-stage of nitrous. Like, I'm talking about...
Super streetable.
Check the rock arms and everything on all the time. You know what I'm saying? But, yeah, I want something I can drive. Got AC in it, cruising, stuff like that.
You got to call us, dude. Let us know. We can at least do the suspension portion. Uh-huh. Hook that part up, make it drivable. Yeah,
get a chassis under it.
Okay. Yeah, get a chassis under it. Make it fucking
handy. Something like a Pro... Something like that. Put a 6-speed in, a little supercharger, something in it where I can play with it a little bit. That's all I want to do to it. But I'm not gonna sell that car. I'm gonna keep that one.
I think Wegner owes you a motor for it, right?
No, he didn't. That was a fictitious lost race.
That was a hypothetical.
What were you at 16 years old? What job did you have at 16?
I was washing cars. So, like, I was actually washing cars at Happy J's Car Wash. I used to walk to work every Saturday and wash cars. So, I used to hand wash cars from about 7 o'clock in the summertime to about 8:30 at night. So, I used to go there I worked at that job from when I was 15, 16, and 17. So, like, actually buying my first pair of shoes, buying clothes, up to buying a car, because I'm really pretty good about saving some money. So, I actually always wanted a car, because working at a car wash, you see every kind of car. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can see a BMW Z4 coming there, or you might see a Donk coming there. You might see a truck, or, you know, 18-wheeler we used to wash. So it was just working in the car wash really got me fascinated with automobiles and burning out and all that kind of stuff. So working at that car wash just saved my money. That's why I got it.
Burning out in customer cars that got you fascinated?
I had a couple customers be like, just put a little extra tie shine on the back tie for me. That's all it was. That's what they would tell me. They'd be like, young boy, come here, young boy. Put a little bit of tie shine on the back tie for me. And they used to leave the parking lot. And
just if
I
had it down,
I would have had some video.
I got to know. I did a little time in a car wash. So I want to know about the car wash. Was this automated car wash? You doing cleanup stuff? This in the hood, street corner car wash by hand?
Yes, real car wash with Eliminator, a 5-gallon bucket, yep, and some stuff and some mitts. We didn't even have no absorbent rag. We had to use two different chamois. One was dry, one was wet. We wiped the window down wet and wipe it off dry. Like, it was a real, in the car wash. Like, real hood car wash.
This brings me to my next question.
Is this going
to
be a Joshism here?
This is a Josh. No, this is a question. We've never had the opportunity for the expo. I've been the only one that's ever been able to explain this business model to these two, right?
That in 26s.
So we've traveled the country doing all kinds of road tours, right? Again, like, yeah. I said, I grew up in the South, sold rims, tires. That's how I cut my teeth in this industry. We did a tour, maybe six or seven years ago. And we went through, we started in Atlanta. We went up to, Charlotte and then hit the coast and went all the way down to Key West, right? A long tour, but we're going through the South. We stopped at like maybe second day in or something like that. It gets brought up. They're asking me about what's the deal with used tire stores. They had never seen a used tire store.
Well, it's so everywhere you look. I mean,
I had to explain to them what used tire stores were.
Man, I'm talking used tire stores was the best. In Orangeburg, we got one on every corner, like a liquor store.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You can go there and get $10 tires. If you roll in there and you complain too much, you will get a free tie. I'm talking about, I mean, if you had a tire shop is like a hood Walmart. You might be there get your tire. They go come save some food. They might want to come get you some whatever the case would be. At the tire store in the South, I'm talking about those things on every corner, and they're a real lifesaver. You don't have to go to Walmart or to Firestone. The tire store got any kind of tire it is. I'm talking from 18-wheelers to tractors to trailer tires.
It's a staple of the neighborhood. It's a staple of the neighborhood. Yeah. And you know, you don't even have to see the sign. You know it because it's generally like one of four colors, and it's always brightly colored.
Yellow, blue.
Yellow, blue, orange, or red, right?
Yep. And he's not lying about that. He got a bunch of blue ones and a bunch of red ones in Orangeburg and in Charleston. But I'm telling you, you can go there. You might can buy race parts, motors, trans, because the tire store always was like a simple mechanic shop also. So if you get your tires changed, they could be like, hey, you need some brakes or some rotors. Then you send a person down to the AutoZone or O'Reilly's, get you some brakes and change the rotors while they change the tire. I mean, I learned a lot from going to tire stores down, especially in Orangeburg.
And they generally do it with like four tools. am I not right? I mean,
with vice grips, a tire eye, a fly, you're gonna need a hammer to get the old tie off, but it's definitely, about four or five tools. And you can change the brake, the rotors, and tire.
Oh, I'm just glad. We're bonding. Me and Sage are fucking bonding, man. Best car movie and why?
The best car movie? I mean, I like Fast and the Furious, the first one. I mean, the first Fast and the Furious to me, I mean, I love that one. Because I actually had cars at that time when the movie was out. So, like, we would drive the cars to the movie. Okay. And then just back in the day, you want to do karate, you come out, you tear the whole parking lot up. We go street racing, we go have a good time. I mean, Fast and the Furious probably is my best car movie.
Hey.
It was a good era.
It was a good era.
When that came out.
Oh, yeah.
Jonathan Goolsbee, right? Former employee, worked with him for a long time. The very first Fast and Furious that came out in Birmingham. Huge launch. His CRX that we had just built, they put inside the movie theater.
Oh,
for,
man.
For the movie. Damn. For the launch of the opening night of Fast and Furious. That's how big we were in the fucking
I see,
imports
I
back
see
in the day.
Dog shit, right? Jonathan rolling in with some K-Swisses.
No doubt.
Right?
At that time, it was Sheltos.
Over-eye.
It was Sheltos. No, it was no over. It was Jonathan had an over-eye. Jonathan had an over-eye until a year ago. But, yeah.
What color were your eyebrows at the time?
For that, it would have been orange. Orange hair, orange hair, or orange eyebrows.
And then that recent movie, though, I can say they cloned Tyrone because they had the dunks and all that stuff in the movie. And they actually depicted the cars right. You know, they actually depicted the cars right in that movie too. So I can say they cloned Tyrone because of the dunks and what they showed in the movie with the car. That's a pretty good movie also.
And I got to finish that movie. I started it on the plane and you always get fucked up when you land, you don't finish and you never go back to it. Good movie though.
Yeah.
Beginning of it was cool.
Yeah.
Best piece of advice you've ever received.
I guess best piece of advice. My uncle, he looked me straight in the face and just say, don't ever quit. Cause as soon as you do, somebody will take your place. So you don't want to quit. I mean, he always tell me never give up, never quit, keep pushing. And that's really, I mean, yeah, my uncle's he's a wealth of knowledge. So never give up, never quit. And you know what I mean? Just keep going.
You want your kids to go in the automotive world or you want to try something different?
Shoot, I mean, already one of them already in the automotive world. He loved race cars. He loved building cars. I mean, all of that. I mean, my daughter, she don't want to do that. She want to sing and dance and other stuff like that. But I mean, I just wanted to learn a trade. So, you know what I mean? As far as going to school and all that stuff is good, but they still need to learn a trade to where they can use their mind, use their hands. Something to where it won't never leave them. So, I mean, as far as them going into the automotive world, there's so many different places you can go in the automotive world as I see now. So it's not just about working on cars anymore. I mean, it has so much other things that you can do. And I mean, because another thing is working with STEM. So like working with the University of Michigan with STEM and teaching the young kids about science and technology through the big wheel racing, it opened my eyes to a lot of different places in the automotive world, because there's a lot of professors and doctors that actually sit there and study these cars in Flint, Michigan. So, I mean, yeah, it's so many different ways to get into the automotive world. I just want my children to be successful and happy. I mean, that's about what I can do for them.
That's a good answer. Real good answer. Yeah. There's like five or six I can go to. We change it. We go to standard questions at the end. I ask every single guest the same questions, but there's different ones I can go to, and I'm trying to think of which direction I want to go to. If you could line up and race with anybody tomorrow, who would it be? Who would it be?
John Force. Hey, I just actually got to talk to John Force at MPMC, and he knew who I was. I'm talking about this.
What?
It blew me away. I'm talking about when I met him at MPMC, I was like, man, I could take a picture with you. I think it was the fellow who does his, like he was doing a magazine article or something. He looked at me. He said, I know you are. And then I just looked at him. I said, oh, shit, John Force.
That's cool.
But, I mean, I would love to race John Force. I mean, I just want to race him so we can get to the top of the hill and talk some shit. Dude, that's all I want.
He'd probably.
I just want to get to the top of the hill, and they hand me and John Force that microphone, and let's see who can talk the best shit. That's it for me. That's it right there.
I think he'd hand you a 55-gallon drum of that Gap sauce that you got. That you got up there, man.
If he can hand me a 55-gallon drum, I'm gonna hand him a whole bottle of Advil. Yeah. I can guarantee you that,
dude. I mean, it ain't nobody listening by now. We're late into this thing. I mean, serious business though. Like when he said, "I know who you are." What the fuck that feel like?
Man, I'm talking about that. It was like, you know how if you've seen That's So Raven, and then you shake the hand and the eyes be like, I just was thinking about, what the hell? That's motherfucking John Ford. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just like, oh, man. I just kept my composure and be like, okay, you know what I'm saying? And then on the pictures on Facebook, he pointing right to the NDRA sign on it because he, you know what I'm saying? He's telling me that's, so to me, that's big because that's, you know what I'm saying? That's John Ford. So I'm just like, I just seen the future, like everything going all the way around. You know what I'm saying? So everything was happening so fast in my mind, but I'm like, he would look at me square in the face, but I know exactly who you are. And I was like, oh shit. But I mean,
that's cool. We always relate everything to like major accomplishments in business and then car world, shows, awards, you know, meeting somebody and then coming back home to reality. Right. And it's either at home or at the shop, right? Did you come home and be like, listen, I ain't taking the fucking trash out. You know John Forrest knew who the fuck I am? Me and John Forrest are basically best friends.
You've been around this shit long enough. You know exactly what the fuck happened. He came back, and the fucking nobody else took the goddamn garbage out.
He still had to take the trash out. Like,
I own the fucking place, and I'm still taking the motherfucking garbage out.
And I ought to tell my wife that she can look right me in the face. Boy, you better take the damn trash out.
I don't give a fuck who John Force thinks you are. You're taking the trash out.
Oh, it definitely. But, you know, I'm still saved. I'm still the dead. I'm still, you know what I'm saying? But that was something big for me. I mean, that was, you know what I'm saying? Just to know who I am, that's crazy. I watched him race my whole life. You know what I'm saying? Like, John Force still racing. He's like 70-something years old. He's still doing what he do.
Yeah.
So, that's crazy.
Fucking nuts.
Oh, yeah.
When you come up to Chicago, man, you got to come see the shop. We're going to give you a tour, show you Chicago.
What part of Chicago y'all in? Because we coming up there in July. I know I'll be up there in Wisconsin, Great Falls. How far y'all from Great Falls Racetrack?
I don't know where Great Falls is.
We're 45 minutes from Chicago, and we're probably 40 or hour from Milwaukee.
Great Lakes Day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah, we're close to that.
Oh, yeah, I definitely come do some YouTube shit, some shop tours and stuff. Yeah. See what's going on.
Let's do that.
Yeah, we definitely can do that for sure.
I know we can call them out. Should we bring the Grand National out?
Phil got some big old balls. He's trying to call a fucking race tonight.
I'm not going to drive
He's trying to call a race tonight.
I'm not ready to talk any shit yet.
You're not?
I don't think so.
We got a little fucking G-Body.
You got a G-Body.
Yeah, a little Grand National.
You say you want to run for a little bit of... Hey, I mean, however you want to do it now. I have something up there for y'all. I would definitely have something at the racetrack right there. Now we can start the shop to a little early.
Oh, Sage has been fucking awesome. Seriously.
I think we got to do the pocket dump.
Oh,
just off of that.
We do this with random guests. What's in your pockets right now? As we speak, what's in your fucking pockets? You got to do a pocket dump.
I got a couple dollars in. I got a couple dollars in there. I mean, let me see what else I get. I ain't got too much crazy stuff now. I ain't too crazy. I got my truck key, my house key, my AirPods. And a couple peppermints. I mean, that's all I got.
No pocket knife?
Nope, I can't handle pocket knives. I'd be on the plane so much every time. They don't take enough TSA of my pocket knife.
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
Here we go.
Funny fucking story.
Yeah.
We fly, what would you say, 100 plus times, triple digits a year, right?
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. This fucking guy, we go to fly last 3 weeks ago, and his bag's fucking pulled because he's got a fucking 12-inch fucking pocket knife in his fucking carry-on.
Dude, it's been in there. I put that fucker in there like 6 or 8 months ago. It's gone through security. I completely forgot it was in there. It's gone through security dozens of times. I mean, it's a 4 or 5-inch blade on it, and all of a sudden they found it. I didn't know it was in there. Not like I was smuggling.
This is what I use right here. I use the right hand or the left hand. I don't need no pocket knife.
Got a right hand of iron and a left hand of steel. Yeah. If my right hand don't get you, my left hand will. That's what they fucking...
I call this one lightning and this one called thunder.
Sage, it's been fucking awesome. Serious, looking forward to July. We want to come up to Great Lakes, and we need to have you down here at the shop and check it out.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. Just let me know. You know what I'm saying? I appreciate it. You know what I mean? Everybody go to my social media stuff. It's @1_dumpmaster. My Facebook is Dumpmaster. My website is inandoutcustom.com. And check it out, man. I appreciate everything with y'all, man, and for having me on here. I'm telling you, it was a blast.
Man. Thanks, man. It was good hanging, dude.
Cheers, Sage.
You know, take care.
Appreciate it, man.
All right.
Big thanks again to Sage, the Donk Master. I think we figured out why he is the Donk Master. Not the Donk Enthusiast, not the Donk Daddy, not the Donk Dude, not the Donk Associated Guy.
The Master.
He's the Donk Master. It's whiskey review time. You don't get to review it. You've had less than an ounce.
Hey, we're talking about pocket dump. I grabbed this thing today. Remember that fucker? Who was that dude?
Red Horse Knife Works.
Yeah.
It's been a fun knife to play with.
Yeah.
Been sitting in the back of the collection. And I've been like, you get in that.
Local guy.
Yeah, you get in that rut of carrying the same thing all the time.
Do you?
Yeah, I got into it. Not quite on the level of you where you've been carrying the same knife for 37 years. But yeah, that thing is fucking rad. The
Red action. Horse Knife Works. This is what? The Hellion? Fuck.
It looks like a
completely
Hellion.
Completely pull out of the ass. Yeah. I don't know if that's right.
Let's You're go. You're a master with it. Of those types.
No, if it's not, it should be renamed.
Let's look it up. Let's look it up. I could be wrong. I'm man enough to admit when I'm wrong. Just don't have to admit it much.
You're also arrogant enough to go through this much effort to prove a point that you're right.
No, I don't know if I am. I'm honest. Let's see.
There will be no celebration if you're right.
Do, 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 do. They will cut this out.
The K is silent, but there's a K on it.
Is it?
Yeah.
Knife.
Knife.
Worse. Hellraiser.
You were close.
I was wrong, but I was close. It was.
Dude, look at that engraved one.
Yeah, that's the Pretty German sick. Series one. They haven't done that one for quite some time.
Man, is that cool?
The Hellraiser. I was wrong. It's the Hellraiser. I think I said it last time we talked about that fucking round over on the back of the blade. It's
the stupidest thing, but it's like my favorite part of the knife.
I know. Yeah. It's so fucking smooth.
My favorite part of the knife is the knife. It's just, the whole thing's really good.
It fits in your hand?
Yeah.
That's a big knife for small hand.
It's a grown-ass fucking man's hand, dude.
Small to medium hand. It's a good knife. Great fucking pull. Red Horse Knife Works. Check him out on Instagram. They're here local to us. The Hellraiser. Everything he does is fucking badass, though.
Yeah. Good looking stuff.
What are you rocking today?
The Benchmade. I don't know the name of this one.
I can see his old ass switching over to toothpicks. You know, that's like an old man thing. I could see like a little toothpick vial, a vial with several toothpicks.
Do you realize what I could do with a toothpick?
What?
Me with a vial of toothpicks is worst fucking
ending. Well, based on the mini toothpick that you sharpen, that you stuck in Phil's leg on that road trip.
That was a dart.
That was an anomaly for that to happen.
So, you gonna tell everybody what happened?
Yeah, so that's a good story. We're sitting there.
It's a short story.
We were on that devil's, what is that thing called? The little twisty.
Dragon's tail.
Dragon's tail, right?
Tail of the dragon.
And we were waiting. We were filming or something.
Or that.
I was right.
I keep looking over at Josh, and he's like whittling something in his hand.
He's old, and that's what old people
sitting
do.
Sitting off there, not talking to anybody. Me and Phil are talking, and he's just shaving something all by him, by his lonesome. And I look over, and he's whittling like a little dart. And he's sitting there, like, fucking with it and looking at it and just casually gives it, like, a little flick. Well, Phil's wearing shorts. It sticks in the side of Phil's leg. Yeah. And then he starts bleeding, like, profusely.
It's a fucking dart, man.
You got a dart on your leg.
Wow. Dude.
I don't think you can do that. You could try doing that 1,000 times, and you couldn't do it
yet. I could do it this afternoon.
I doubt it.
Tomorrow. I could do it tomorrow. It was a good time. I couldn't do it tonight.
All right. Whiskey review. Castle and Key.
Castle and Key.
Great. Hey, we didn't get to break out
the PGS. Yeah, we've all seen it.
Oh, dude.
It's back. Oh, my God.
It's back.
Hey, if anybody wants to see what Phil's carrying tonight, look back at the previous 199 episodes, and it's the exact same thing.
Or if somebody wants to please gift him a knife.
Give Phil a knife.
A fucking Swiss Army knife.
If there's a Miata knife.
Ooh, that'd be money.
Yeah, get him a knife. Send me the bill. I'll cover it. I'm not nice enough to go out and get one for him on my own.
Phil needs to stop carrying that knife. He's broken that knife, rebuilt that knife.
Broken it again.
Recarried that knife.
Yeah, we're back at it. It's good to go now.
Dude, there's so many knives.
I know. Find something you like. Stick with it.
Oh.
Castle and Key.
Whiskey review time. This is where we review whiskey that we drank tonight on the episode.
Yep.
By review. Whiskey review.
Everybody's been eyeing that one up on the shelf.
Great looking bottle. Yeah. Great looking logo. Good cap. Good little neck.
You
thing.
Have it. I did. You've drank it. Yeah. I have it. Haven't drank it till tonight.
And you have hiccups.
Castle and Key weeded. 102 proof. This is distilled and aged in the Old Taylor rickhouse.
And as most people know, that is a concrete rickhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows.
Everybody.
If you're into whiskey.
Josh, enlighten us with your useless knowledge.
I picked this bottle up around about the same time that you picked it up, and I did a little research. I just, searched
just
and then I read a review and I read a little article, and I was like, oh, that's kind of fucking cool. It's aged 5 years, 5 years age statement on it.
Which is also cool.
Also cool. Anything that has an age statement at this point in time in 2024.
It's got a number.
It's got an age statement.
It's got a number of things going for it.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
You drank not near enough to be able to review it. So I think you'll sit this one out, right?
If you'd like me to, I'd drink a glass of it. I'd have drank more if it was better, probably. That was good. It was. I hit it with a 7-0. I think it's a buy it for sure.
7-0. I like Jeremy.
I always like the weeded stuff. I like anything with an age statement, or at least I like to buy it if it has an age statement. But it's good.
Got a different flavor profile.
Elaborate on that. Lean into
it's
that a little
more
bit.
On the brighter, spicier. This isn't like thick maple, viscous, like dark side. This is a bright, light, spicy side.
Like flowers and rainbows.
I didn't say that.
I'm trying to interpret your words.
Brother. No, this so would
for the
be,
for the listeners.
This would be thin, light, Blanton's, Noah's Mill, spicy, not deep, not maple.
Okay. I get it.
Not viscosity.
I see where you're going with it.
Yeah. It's that direction.
Yep.
I don't have the words to.
Did you like it?
I did like it.
How much did you like it? If you had to put a number on how much you liked it,
like a
rating?
Yeah.
We should do a rating.
Like,
I'm doing a 6.7. Oh.
Solid. I'm going to go 6.5. A little hot.
Hot?
Spicy.
It's not hot.
Spicy.
It's 102 proof. It's not hot.
You're spicy. Like the cool spicy. Guy all of a sudden. No. I only drink high proof stuff. Look at me.
We've been drinking 90 to 102, 105 all the time. If it gets to 120, it's high proof.
It has a little bit of the burn to it.
It does.
The initial, yes.
You know why? It's the age. It's young.
Tis. Yeah, I was hoping for a little bit more out of the... Mainly out of just the bottle and the label presentation.
Still looks
and
then, fucking good.
Yeah, and being weeded. Yeah, a little bit let down. Still buy it better than a lot of other stuff out there. 6.5.
I think you went a little low.
I think I went a little high. I think the ratings might be a little off tonight.
We might
be a little mixed up.
So like 6.7 being right in between 6.5 and 7.0, probably right there in the middle of it.
I generally don't like to give you a win, but I think you might
6.75.
I think, yeah. Hey, good. Who did somebody say 6.75? Did you say?
No, yeah, none
I think,
of us said it.
I think Phil's, well, that's a good review.
Yeah. It is a great review. Yeah.
Let's just go 6.75.
It's probably whoever didn't say 6.75 is an idiot. Fucking great interview tonight. Fun.
Yeah. Cool dude. Hell of a businessman. He's got a lot of neat stuff going on.
Hey, used tire stores.
I knew all about it. That was one thing I knew all about because Uncle Josh filled me in, sat me down on his lap and told me all about used tires.
It should be a whole new episode of just like
Uncle Josh.
Yeah. Uncle Josh reflects.
Thanks for listening to Oil and Whiskey with the Roadster Shop and Ironclad Original. If you like the show, be sure to leave a rating or review. Go check out Donkmaster YouTube, Instagram @Donkmaster1, @In-N-Out Customs. We'll see you again next week.